Hello, my name is Adam Benson, and I'm the press secretary for Congressman Dingell. Thank you for coming on the line tonight and being a part of this event, Congressman Dingell's first telephone town hall. This is an opportunity for you to ask some questions about his work in Washington on issues including energy security and climate change, health care, and the war in Iraq. To ask the Congressman a question, please hit star 3. That's star 3. You'll hear us mention that quite a bit. Star 3 on your keypad. A member of the Congressman's staff will come on briefly to get your name and basic information. After that, you will be returned to the call, and the Congressman will try to get to your question as quickly as possible. If the Congressman cannot get to your question, there is a chance to leave that question on a voicemail at the end of the call, and we will work to get an answer as quickly as possible. Now, since this is our first telephone town hall, we may encounter a couple of technical glitches here or there. We apologize in advance for those, but if something does come up, we will try to address the problem as quickly as possible. Before I hand the call over to the Congressman, just another reminder, hit star 3 on your keypad if you'd like to ask a question. With that, I'm pleased to hand it over to Congressman Dingell. Congressman?
Good evening. This is John Dingell, and welcome to everybody. Thank you for taking time out of your evening to talk to me about your concerns. Again, I want to repeat, if you have a question at any time during the call, please press star 3. To start things off, I want to tell you that we're about to commence the new session of Congress, and we have a chance to look back to see what it is we did in the last session of Congress. Again, if you have a question, please press star 3. One of the most important things that Congress did, and the President recently signed into law, is landmark energy legislation, which will make everything from light bulbs to light trucks more energy efficient. Altogether, it will remove better than 10 billion tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere by the year 2030. That's the equivalent of taking all cars, trucks, and planes off the roads and out of the skies for better than 5 years. This bill increases the fuel economy of our motor vehicles by 40%. It gives manufacturers the flexibility needed to get the job done and to preserve jobs in America. I work hard to broker a good deal for both the environment and our economy. And I'm pleased that the bill is the first step towards my goals will reduce greenhouse gases, which we hope we will ultimately accomplish, by 60-80% by 2050. This bill will reach about 40% of that goal. Now, I want to make it clear, there's more to be done, and I'm working with my Energy and Commerce Committee colleagues to draft comprehensive climate change legislation. I'm also going to pursue a carbon tax, and including increasing federal gas tax. It gives industry certainty, and it encourages alternative energy. A three-pronged plan of efficiency standards, cap and trade, and carbon fee will get us to the reductions we need without placing an undue burden on one industry or one community. For more details on this, please go to my website, www.house.gov/Dingell. This year, we have had some very special problems. Better than 500 products and millions of pounds of foods recalled this year, including better than 20 million toys. We need to start catching these problems before the products get onto the store shelves. We need to restore consumer confidence in the safety of food, toys, and consumer products, and various other goods. This is hard to do, for example, when you have too few food and drug inspectors and only 15 consumer product safety commission inspectors monitoring millions of toys and thousands of tons of products entering the United States. That's why that I am so pleased that we have recently reported from the committee and have seen pass into the hands of the Senate legislation which will substantially increase the powers of consumer product safety commission to protect consumers. It will ban lead from children's products, improve efficiency and speed of products and recalls, require mandatory safety standards and third-party testing for children's products, and increase the cap on civil penalties imposed on violators. Now, Food and Drug Administration is also overburdened, particularly on foods, drugs, cosmetics, health appliances of different kinds, and on all of the areas of its responsibility. And it is less than able to inspect less than 1% of all food due to lack of resources. As a country that imports 13% of our food supply, the current inspection level is totally unacceptable and is unsafe for our people. To protect the people of this country that are worried about losing their homes, we need to do a lot more. First, to prevent further crises through increased regulation of the market, where mischief and rascality are rampant. We need to ensure homebuyers will continue to have access to credit where appropriate, and we need to take steps to assist individuals confronting foreclosure. I will note that, unfortunately, the administration's voluntary plan, which was drafted by major lending institutions for certain qualifying industries, individuals to freeze their adjustable rate mortgages for up to 5 years, is not going to do the job that has to be done. Anytime an administration says it wants something voluntary, it means that it looks good, but isn't probably going to do much. In states like Michigan, with high unemployment and foreclosure rates, this plan automatically excludes too many people, and evidence now pending in this state leads me to believe that many people that have asked for help have been or will be turned down. I again remind all of our listeners tonight that if you need to raise a question or be heard, please push *3. The last major concern that I want to talk about, the last two major concerns I want to talk about is, first of all, national health insurance and health care. We're the only major country in the world which has no major program for health care for our people. This is causing a disastrous anti-competitive consequence for our industry, and it is creating massive hardship for the 47 million Americans who have no health care. This is something which must be addressed and which I hope we can finally bring into reality soon. The last item that I want to discuss here in this part of the program is to talk about the war in Iraq. It remains the most critical foreign policy issue our nation faces. Increasing the number of troops in Iraq did lead to a reduction in violence, but it also made 2007 the deadliest year for our troops in Iraq since the beginning. And we have lost 899 men and women in this unfortunate year. That's why in 2007 I introduced legislation requiring the President to begin withdrawing our troops from Iraq within 30 days and to complete it by January 20, 2009, which by an interesting circumstance is the last day in which he will hold office. My bill would allow the United States to safely and responsibly begin bringing our troops home while fulfilling our responsibilities to the Iraqi people in the way that was suggested by the Baker-Hamilton Bipartisan Commission. In any event, I hope that if you have questions now, you will help us by pushing *3 so that we can begin addressing the concerns of our people. And I want to thank you all again for being here tonight.
Well, let me just first of all say thank you all for joining. We have more than 300 calls right now already, people participating. Thank you so much for being a part of it. And also, I just want to get this thing started by asking a question about choice safety. Mr. Dingell, you mentioned in the opening statement that 2007 was deemed the year of the recall by many because of the numerous toy and food recalls. Can you give us a little more about your work to safeguard our imported products such as toys from countries like China, and as well as food and drugs from foreign countries?
Well, there's two separate problems here. One is food and drug, and one is the Consumer Product Safety Commission's responsibilities, which deal with things other than foods, drugs, and cosmetics. I'm pleased to report that for the first time in years, we have brought up to date the Consumer Product Safety Commission and its powers under H.R. 4040. This, I hope, will be passed shortly by the Senate, and I look forward to having this bipartisan bill signed into law by the President. What does it do? It, first of all, creates the toughest lead standard in the world for children's products. It requires mandatory safety standards for grocery products, cribs and high chairs, and a thorough review on toys. It requires mandatory third-party testing of children's products. It requires tracking labels to aid recalls, and it prohibits sale, resale, or export or re-export of recalled products so that they can't get back into the traffic of the world. And last of all, it improves public notice so that the public is properly protected. It does this while protecting the rights of injured consumers to sue bad actors, and it strengthens enforcement against bad actors. It is something about which I'm very proud and which I think will make for effective protection of the consuming public in this country.
Okay, with that, I want to take our first caller. We're going to go to Eric from Monroe, who has a related question. Eric?
Yeah.
Hello, Eric. Go ahead.
We at the Union Hall down there, down on Detroit Avenue there. I'm a worker down at Ford, Monroe Ford plant. And my question was about the Chinese toys coming into this country and basically the shoddy Chinese products that are coming in and beating down American workers that are perfectly capable of making those products.
Well, you're absolutely right. I have no objection to competition with foreigners in an economy of the world which is now global in character. But I do intend to see to it that this competition will be conducted fairly. First, that the Chinese and everybody else who sells to us will sell us safe products made by properly paid workers and observing careful attention to the environment and other things the way we do in this country. I also expect to see to it that those products are safe. And if the Chinese won't address this question, or the Indians or anybody else won't address these questions, that we will see to it that we properly reinforce our own law and our own agencies for the protection of our people. That's why the passage of this legislation on Consumer Product Safety Commission addressing the problem of toys and other consumer products is so important. But it's also why next year, rather this year now, I intend to start on major improvements in food and drug to see to it that the foods, drugs, and cosmetics now coming into our country are safe and that we have proper and adequately financed and staffed food and drug able to have the proper authorities to address unsafe foods, drugs, cosmetics, and other commodities of this character so that they don't come into this country to hurt and endanger the health and the welfare of our people.
Okay, thank you very much, caller. Right now, we're going to take a call from Dave Nixon. He's the president of Monroe Community College. We're so glad to have you joining us today. And you have a question for Congressman Dingell. Fire away.
Yes, thank you, Congressman. And I wanted to say, first of all, how much we appreciate all you do for Michigan, Southeast Michigan, and for those of us that live and enjoy this great part of the country. I had a question tonight regarding the potential for the development of another nuclear power plant here in Monroe. But first, I wanted to say, on behalf of our students, that our students are the human resources that develop with high skills to be able to work in or have work opportunities for building facilities like a nuclear power plant. And as you know, the DTE is considering whether or not to make an application. So I guess I would be curious as to your outlook on the potential for an application for DTE to develop or to build another power plant, another nuclear power plant.
Well, first of all, I want to say welcome, Dr. Nixon, and I want to tell you what a great job you and Monroe Community College do in terms of providing wonderful education and educational opportunities to our young people down there in Monroe County. It's a superb institution. Your leadership is a wonderful thing to behold. Having said this, if this country is to address the problem of global warming and the possibility of climate change, there's one thing that is absolutely necessary, and that is that we're simply going to have to resolve the problem of going to increase use of nuclear energy. This program started by President Kennedy is one which we have no choice but to go to and which I intend to do everything I can to see to it that we move to a safe and secure system of nuclear energy production in this country. And that will include trying to see to it that we have a proper expansion of this kind of program wherever the economic and energy needs of the country dictate. And that would mean, of course, including what could be done in Monroe. And it is my belief that with the new generation of nuclear electric-generated facilities that we can accomplish this end and can have proper, safe use of this kind of energy production without any peril to our people.
Okay, Bridget, stand by. I'm going to get to you in just a moment. First, I want to drop in a poll question. That's right. You have an opportunity to answer a poll question for us here. Congressman Dingell has introduced legislation that would begin withdrawing our troops from Iraq within 30 days and would mandate that all U.S. troops are out of Iraq before President Bush leaves office. Do you support such a plan? Now, if you'd like to take part in this poll, here's what you do. Press 1 if you'd like to answer yes to that question. Press 2 if no. Real quick, Congressman Dingell has introduced legislation that would begin withdrawing our troops from Iraq within 30 days and would mandate that all U.S. troops are out of Iraq before President Bush leaves office. Do you support that plan? Press 1 for yes, 2 for no. With that, I want to remind everybody again, hit star 3 if you're just coming onto the call and you have a question for the congressman. With that, like I said, I would like to go to Bridget. Go ahead, Bridget.
Hi, sir. My question is about jobs. Studies show that a 20% national standard for renewable energy by 2020 would create almost 200,000 jobs across the U.S., including almost 5,000 jobs in Michigan. And you voted against this policy in August of last year, and the renewable energy standard was removed from the energy bill in December before it was brought for a final vote. Are you going to make sure that a renewable energy standard is passed by the House this year?
Well, I'm going to make sure that we pass the best possible legislation that we can in the field of energy. The earlier effort with regard to renewable energy and the renewable energy portfolio was crafted in, quite frankly, an excess of haste, and it was dropped in the Senate because of the fact that it did not work. I'm going to try and see to it that this year, that when we address this question, that we have a more carefully thought-out program of renewable energy. There are two components to addressing this. Now, first of all, I want to make it clear, I support the idea that we should use renewable energy to the fullest degree possible. But remember this, in the practice of medicine, the Hippocratic Oath says, first, do no harm. And so in drafting that legislation, we must see to it, first of all, that the number and the percentage is suitable and proper. I think 20% is possible. Having said that, that's more by 5% than was in the original bill. The problem with the original proposal that was before the House was that it did not consider peculiar local circumstances and conditions. For example, it did not allow a large percentage of wood chips and wood products to be used. 2, it did not allow for nuclear. 3, it required an excessive dependence on wind in a place like Michigan where we don't have an awful lot of wind. That might work fine in the Senate, but regrettably, it isn't particularly good for the state of Michigan. And there were a number of other things which really require much more careful attention. For example, municipal waste would not be allowed to be used and to get credit for renewable standards. That, I think, was a terrible waste and a terrible mistake. So we're going to try and write a much more responsible and carefully drafted piece of legislation, which I think will accomplish our purposes of getting renewable energy, but doing so in an effective and a satisfactory and a workable way.
Okay, thank you very much for that question. And again, I want to remind you folks who are calling in, hit star 3 if you have any questions. A lot of people are still coming into the call, and we really appreciate your participation. Right now, we want to go to Sharon from Bellevue, who has a question for the congressman regarding health care. Sharon.
Hello.
Hello, Sharon.
Oh, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to have this public discussion. And I'd like to one thing before I get to my question regarding the recalls on all the things from China. Is that I did happen to see dishes that are coming in with lead supposedly in the dye with warning labels on them.
The Chinese are not giving us much in the way of warning labels, and their protection of consumers or indeed of any part of the proper traffic in trading in goods and services is very, very questionable.
This was printed made in China, and I think it was coming through California. The label was on there very, very, very slimy. It actually fell off when I picked it up. But that was a little scary to think that you're eating off of that, too. My other question was, people that don't have health care, what would you recommend that they do when they pretty much have immediate concerns with their health that are just steadily getting worse without proper treatment?
Well, President Bush says that we have a health care system in this country. And he says if you have a health problem, that you should go to an emergency room. This is the wrong thing. First of all, your question, I think, has two possible answers and two possible concerns. The first is, what should be done? My thesis is we need a program of national health insurance of a single payer, the way they do in Canada, Britain, and in every other major industrial country in the world. This makes these countries competitive in ways that industrially we are not able. It also leaves us with 47 million Americans without any health insurance or health care at all. Having said that, I propose again to move forward to try and get the same national health insurance package that I've been pushing for since I went to Congress. With regard to what are we going to do? I have to say that probably with the certainty of a veto from this president and the opposition of my Republican colleagues in the Congress and the hopeless opposition of the health insurance lobby, that it is almost certain that we cannot pass one until after the next election, at which time I intend to see to it that we make this highly desirable change by beginning to move forward on the kind of program that we were pushing when President Clinton was in the White House and when we failed by only one vote to get a program of national health insurance, which would have seen to it that the concerns and the cares of every American who now lacks health care would have been addressed.
Thank you very much for that question. It's another time for me to remind everybody who's coming into the call that we'd like you to hit *3 if you have a question for the congressman. Please hit *3. This is also an opportunity for me to update you on the poll that we mentioned regarding Iraq and pulling out. Right now, 61% of you have said that you do approve of the congressman's plan to get troops out of Iraq by January 20, 2009. And we really do appreciate all that support from all of you. And right now, we want to take a call from Donald from LaSalle. Donald, please welcome to the call, and please ask your question to the congressman.
Yes, Congressman Dingell, Donald Thurber here. I'm wondering what you have in mind of help fix the Social Security problem, which is going to go defunct in 10 years or so. Can you comment anything on a plan that you might have for input into changing or fixing up the program?
Well, Social Security is one of the most uniquely successful pieces of legislation and programs in the history of this country or any other. It is, first of all, the cheapest way of raising money and the most effective and efficient way of doing so, with a cost of less than 1% as opposed to about 8% for the cost of an industrial program of the same character as it were with the same purposes. That's true both with regard to Medicare and with regard to Social Security. Social Security is going to be in balance until about 2030 or so. It will begin at that point to begin to see to see a decline in revenues which will not keep up with the charges which will be put against it with the increasing retirement of our baby boomers and the exhaustion of the trust fund. Having said that, this is fairly easily correctable. First of all, there are several things that can be done. One, for us to eliminate the ceiling on contributions. Now, the person's making more, rather, when you make more than $92,000 a year, you no longer pay a tax on amounts above that. That is easily correctable, and that alone would probably bring the Social Security system into balance. There are some other things that we could do by putting a little bit of tax revenue into Social Security, with the result that Social Security could be made actuarially sound. I would point out that first of all, this country will not, cannot, and dare not let Social Security crater, and so I anticipate that the Congress and a new president will begin to address this in a way which will see to it that this vital protection for our senior citizens remains intact for the rest of this century.
Okay, thank you very much. Again, I want to remind folks, I can't remind you enough, hit *3 if you have a question for the congressman. *3, and you'll go to one of our screeners. We'll get that question in as soon as possible. Excuse me. Now I would like to go to a question from Dave, who has a question about the Iraq War. Dave, you are on with Congressman Dingell. Just go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, Congressman.
Hello, Dave. How are you?
Real good. I guess my question is it's a shame on all of our soldiers that have died over in Iraq, and I feel bad about that, but I guess my question is on all the thousands that are coming back that have been wounded, missing, you know, limbs and everything else. I get phone calls all the time from the veterans, you know, wanting money to help support the wounded, you know, and I understand that. I've given to them, but my thought is you're talking long term on these guys and these girls, you know. You know, years and years on some of them. And has there been money put away, and has anybody done a study on what it's going to cost, and if there's going to be money for these soldiers?
Well, we're beginning to now understand what the Iraq War is going to cost. First of all, we've lost better than 3,800 dead over there. As a matter of fact, about 3,900 dead. And we have lost some 28,661 who have been injured in different ways. In many instances, in the most gruesome and awful ways, with loss of arms, legs, eyes. And then we're having people who are having brain injuries and emotional troubles. The total cost of this is probably going to exceed $1 trillion, perhaps as much as $2 trillion. One of my major fights inside the Congress has been to see to it that we put enough money in to address the problems of our veterans and their health care. This administration has sought in a number of instances to cut back on the money available for treatment of veterans, both at existing hospital facilities and for veterans of earlier wars, but also for the veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, who, by the way, are being wounded in some of the most awful fashions imaginable. If you've ever visited them, as I have, you'll know exactly what I'm saying. But having said that, this Congress has, for the first time, seen to it that we're putting adequate money in to meet the needs and the requirements of those veterans. We added $3 billion to the President's request with regard to veterans. That will see to it, for example, that the Johnny Dingell Hospital in downtown Detroit and the Ann Arbor Hospital, Veterans Hospital, have the budgets that they need to take care of our veterans and to provide them with the care that they desperately need, but also to see to it that we're able to provide the necessary services and care that is required for our veterans who are being hurt over there in Afghanistan and Iraq. Something which absolutely must be done as a matter of just simple justice and decency.
Okay, thank you very much. I want to remind everybody again, if you have a question for the congressman, please hit *3. You'll get into our queue, and then we can get your question into the line for the congressman. And before we go to another question, I do want to mention there's a new poll question that we have in there. Those of you who are just getting into the call, you can join us and answer a poll question. I'm going to fire away with that question for you right now. What direction do you feel the economy is headed? If you feel it's getting better, press 1. If you feel it's getting worse, press 2. I'll ask the question again. What direction do you feel the economy is headed in? Press 1 for getting better, press 2 for getting worse. And with that, We want to go now to a question. We have another distinguished guest on the phone, Hale Zorn from the Monroe County Commission. Hale, you have a question for the Congressman? Fire away.
Good evening, Congressman. How are you?
Dale, I'm well, and I'm delighted to hear your voice. I hope you're doing well.
We're doing well here. The weather's good.
And I appreciate the job that you're doing for the people of Monroe down there.
Thank you. Thank you. We hope we have a good year this year as we did last year. Congressman, my question is, as you know, that not only Monroe County roads, but roads across Michigan is many years behind repairs and updating. Michigan has been considered a donor state for many years. Putting that aside, what do we have to do to bring more federal dollars into Michigan for roads?
Well, you're absolutely right. This is a major concern. When I went to Congress, Michigan was getting below 90% of its money back. We have raised that to the point where in a recent road bill, we got it up to 90.5%, and now it is up to 92%. The biggest problem we had, as you'll recall, was with the last road bill, was that we had a terrible fight with the administration. And the fight was over whether or not we were putting sufficient money into the overall program. This entailed two things. First of all, the addressing of the formula so that Michigan got its fair share back. We got it up to 92%. But the big problem was that the administration threatened to veto the bill unless we did not add new revenues. Michigan, as you know, has its tax on a cents per gallon basis, which results every year with increase in energy costs from something like $20 a barrel to now about $100 a barrel, in meaning that much less revenue, real revenue, comes into the state of Michigan because of the tax. We tried to get the federal tax increased so as to make up for some of this, and had we been successful in that, the end consequence would have been, first of all, more money for Michigan, and second of all, we would have then been able to have addressed the formula so that Michigan would have gotten 100% of its money back. This we will address, Dale, when we get around to writing the next piece of highway legislation. Now, one of the problems that we have here in Michigan, with which I'm sure you're familiar, is that over the years, Michigan has oftentimes not been able to come up with the match that they needed to meet the federal funds available. But the end result is, with the end result that Michigan was never able to, not infrequently, to meet the federal highway monies that were available because Michigan couldn't come up with its share of the federal state match.
Okay. Just another opportunity for me to remind all of you that you should dial *3 if you have a question for the congressman. I do want to mention the poll that we started just a few moments ago regarding the direction of the economy. We asked you if you thought it was getting better or getting worse. 90% of you have said you feel that it's getting worse. Again, if you would like an opportunity to respond to that poll question, what direction you feel the economy is headed in, press 1 for getting better, press 2 for getting worse. And with that, I'd like to take a call from John from Ann Arbor, who has a call regarding Great Lakes restoration. John, you're on live with Congressman Dingell.
Yes, Congressman Dingell. Thank you for holding this online conference. I recently heard speakers who were representing the groups that are trying to restore the Great Lakes. And I know the federal government has spent some money, a lot of money, to help restore the Everglades in Florida. Michigan, we have 20% of, I believe, the world's fresh water, but we're not managing it by reducing the sewage runoff from contamination of joint wastewater and sewage overflows into the lake, closed beaches. What are we doing? What can we do? What do you propose to do to help restore the Great Lakes?
Well, you're absolutely right in asking this question and having this concern. First of all, the Great Lakes are one of the greatest treasures in the world. And protection of them is a matter of the greatest concern to this nation. Now, having said that, first of all, what have been the problems? Well, obviously, misuse and abuse of the Great Lakes has been a terrible problem. For years, we were draining water out of the Great Lakes down through the Chicago Canal. We have finally seen to it that that is no longer a problem by defeating Illinois' efforts to divert water out of the Great Lakes. And we still are having problems with people who are seeking to do this and people who would like to do this. Now, there are two other problems that are very severe. The first of which is the continued introduction of exotic and dangerous species like zebra mussels, the lamprey eel, the goby, and a number of other species of invasive kinds of fish and animals and things of that in the Great Lakes. The last is, of course, the problem of pollution itself, which is a terrible problem before we even address the question of lake levels. For years, the Great Lakes were being turned into a cesspool. And as you'll remember, in the 50s, they were talking about Lake Erie as being a dead sea. Well, we have, because of the enactment of the 1955 Clean Air Act and other legislation like that, been able to turn it around. And one of the things of which I'm most proud is the fact that I led the fight to see to it that we made full funding of the Federal Clean Water Act, which wound up forcing Lyndon Johnson to spend better than $16 billion a year to clean up the waters of the nation. That was the result of that, I'm pleased to tell you, was that we saved Lake Erie and cleaned up the waters of the nation. Unfortunately, President Reagan had the view that this was a waste of taxpayers' money, and he led the fight to have that program terminated. Regrettably, now we find ourselves without the money that it takes to do the job of protecting our nation's waters. Worse than this, not only are we polluting and contaminating our nation's waters, but we're going further, and that is we're now allowing the ditching and the draining and other things like that, which will cause for further loss of our waters, particularly the destruction of wetlands, which are so important. This administration I've had quite a fight with, because I remember when the head of the EPA was back there to tell us what a great job they were doing on the Great Lakes Initiative. I said, well, your Great Lakes Initiative is a wonderful thing, but you're spending about 20% of the money that you are supposed to spend under law. So what I am working on with my colleagues from the Great Lakes area is to see to it that we do exactly what you're talking about. Address the problem of the Great Lakes the way we do the problems of the Everglades or the problems of Chesapeake Bay. And in fact, carry this over to address other water problems in this country to save not only the integrity of the water source, the wetlands, but also to see to it that we protect against pollution and that we begin a really meaningful program of cleaning up these waters.
Okay, I'd like to remind everybody again, please hit *3 if you have a question for the congressman. That's *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you as quickly as possible. We've had so far 2,800 people who participated tonight. We're really glad to have all the participation. Thank you for checking in on our call. Right now, I want to go to Paulette, and she has another question on consumer safety. Paulette, please fire away with your question for the congressman.
Thank you for taking my call, and I think my question may have been answered, but the question is with regard to why we don't make mandatory the importers of consumer products the certification of lead-free products by third-party testing prior to bringing them into our country, as we have to certify our products before we allow our consumers to purchase, so that the playing field is level.
Well, your question is a very good one. First of all, almost all standards with regard to safety, environment, worker protections, and things of that kind are done under the domestic law of the country concerned. We have strong laws on this, but our competitors around the world do not. That is particularly the case with regard to China. So there are several things that we're trying to do about this. First, one, to see to it that our trade agreements now have protections against things like currency manipulation, the safety of workers, working conditions, and also to see to it that necessary protections are put in place for consumer protections. One of the things that I have, that I'm very pleased I can report to you is that we have addressed this problem of consumer goods other than foods, drugs, and cosmetics, and appliances and devices like heart valves and things of that kind, were addressed in major changes made in the consumer product safety laws, which I'm happy to say I was one of the original sponsors of years ago. You will see when the Senate has passed that legislation, if we get the President to sign it, that there will be major changes in the way that the Chinese behave with regard to these kinds of consumer products. Having said that, I intend to do two things during the forthcoming Congress with regard to food and drug. The first is to put in place charges against countries which export to us so that we can actually charge for safety that would be put in place by food and drug. In other words, personnel and other things like laboratories to see to it that these drugs that are coming in and the foods and others are safe. For example, we can import less, rather we can inspect less than 1% of the foods that come in. The end result is that there is no security for our people. Beyond that, we have a massive problem in terms of seeing to it that there are enough people and that we have strong enough laws to protect our people. We require, for example, with regard to foods and drugs manufactured in this country, that not only are they inspected and are cleared by food and drug, but, and this is very important, that good manufacturing practices are used. There's no such requirement with regard to the Chinese. I intend to see to it that our trading partners observe the same kinds of high standards that our people do here in this country. And we have legislation which I've introduced, which is now pending, upon which we will start very shortly after the new Congress begins on the 15th to move forward with legislation to address this, see to it that there is funding and resources for food and drug, and that we can, for example, keep laboratories of food and drug available and open for the protection of our people here in Detroit, which is the third largest port of importation in the whole United States.
Okay, with that, real quick, I want to remind everybody we want to hit *3 when you have a question for the congressman. *3 when you have a question for the congressman. Right now, we're going to take a question on Iraq from Belinda from Monroe. Belinda, fire away with your question.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was just wondering, with all the money that's been spent on the war, why is it that the troops pay for their boots out of their own personal money?
I am not aware of this, but if you have this information, I would be delighted to know about it and to take the matter up with the Department of Defense. One of our major efforts has been, in spite of the opposition of our people to that, to see to it that our troops over there have the equipment, all the way from boots to vehicles to firearms and everything else that are necessary to see to it that they can do their job and can come home safely. So if you have information on this, I want to hear about it as quickly as I can so that we can get on this and find out just what is going on and why we cannot provide that kind of equipment and protection and service for our people.
Okay. A reminder again to everybody, I can't say this enough. If you have a question for the congressman, please hit *3. You'll get into our queue, and we will get to your question as soon as possible. Right now I want to go to Tom from Ann Arbor, who's got a question on fuel economy.
Congressman Dingell, I appreciate your valiant efforts to cut the best deal you could with your fellow congressman with fuel economy standards. To be honest with you, I almost believe that there's an anti-Detroit bias in Congress, and with all due respect, I think a lot of that's coming from your Democratic colleagues. Is there anything that can be done to better that relationship with the Detroit automakers?
Well, Tom, you asked a good question because I have the difficult problem of addressing two concerns. One is safety and health and environment with regard to the production of automobiles and other commodities marketed in this country. And the other is to, at the same time, see to it that we do not destroy the jobs upon and the industry upon which our people are so heavily dependent. There is this problem of an anti-Detroit bias. Frankly, you'll find it on almost any street corner, and you can see it in my mailbox. You also can see it in the newspapers, and if you travel to a place like California, you'll see it just about on every street or street corner. Now, having said that, it is not something which is limited only to the Democrats. And to try and see to it that we get the necessary balance in this kind of undertaking has been one of the most difficult chores that I've had to confront, because Americans, whether they're in the UAW or whether they're in the auto industry or wherever they are, they're all dependent on a clean and wholesome and a decent environment, and they all care about these things. The problem is how we come up with a proper balance and how we preach this gospel to the unbelieving and the unshriven. I do not have you an answer. I know that it is one of the worst and most difficult battles that I have on a continuing basis. But I'm pleased to report to you that, thank God, during this Congress, we were able to come up with something which could be supported by both the UAW, the auto industry, and the environmentalists, by the House and the Senate, and frankly by the administration. Tends to show that we got some pretty good balance, but it sure took a lot of hard work to get there.
Okay, and one more reminder to folks, we would love for you to hit *3 if you have a question for the congressman. Right now, I want to go to Barbara, who has a question about right to work. Barbara, go ahead and ask your question to the congressman.
Hi, Congressman Dingell.
Hello, Barbara.
My question is related to the situation that they talk about on TV. Bill Bonds, one of our prominent reporters here, tells you not to work for the right to work law. I don't know that much about it. I just hear the commercials, and I just was wondering what your view on that is and what exactly that is. And a second question, if I may, they also, in regard to that, you were saying about the safety in terms of the imports and foods and stuff that come in. What about that big scare that they had about the pet food, that people found all kind of stuff in the pet food, and they were examining the pet food? Has anything been done in that area?
Your point with regard to pet food is an example of what, for example, the Chinese are doing. And we have a terrible problem with not only misbehavior by them with regard to pet food, but also with other foods and drugs and cosmetics, counterfeits, the whole business. And we have literally borders which are far too open. And if you look, you will find that all manner of unsafe commodities are coming in. That's why I intend to address this question vigorously by giving food and drug not only more revenues, but more personnel and more powers. So you should stay tuned to watch as that fight goes forward. Now, having said that, right to work. Right to work is something that sounds awful, but when you want to pass a bad piece of legislation, the best thing you can do for yourself is to give it a good sounding name. The simple fact of the matter is, if you read the great labor encyclicals of the popes, Quadragesimo Anno and Rerum Novarum, you'll find that they talked about the dignity of labor and the right of workers to organize and to take steps to protect themselves. Right to work laws take away from workers the right to protect themselves and the right to see to it that they have decent and safe and honorable working conditions. They are a very, very bad thing. And if you take a look at the difference between wages and working conditions in right-to-work states and in states which allow unions to represent and work for and look after the rights of the workers, you'll find that the protection of workers in those right-to-work states suffers very, very badly. Well, I want to thank everyone for being with us tonight. Unfortunately, our time is up, and I want to thank you for being a part of this first of our telephone town halls. I really appreciate the time that you've given us this evening and the time you've taken out of your lives to do that. And I hope that it's been as useful as it has been for me. I want to ask you all to accept my thanks and invite you to visit the website that we maintain to maintain contact with our people, www.house.gov/Dingell, to see the latest news, email, and to sign up for newsletters and things of that kind. If you did not get to ask a question or would like to leave a comment on any issue of importance to you, I hope that you will leave a voicemail message for either me or my staff at the end of the call when prompted by the recorded message. Again, I want to thank everyone for participating. I want to wish you all a good night, a happy new year, and I look forward to talking to you all again soon. Thank you, and God bless you all.